Welcome to ASRML tutorial 2.3, where we're looking at fitting an animal model to the Harvey data. In the last session, we looked at fitting a sire model to this small, fairly simple set of data. In this session, we'll fit an equivalent animal model. Now, to fit an animal model requires specifying to ASRML a relationship matrix. And in this case, where we had 65 animals, the progeny of 9 sires and unknown dams, the relationship matrix is based on a pedigree file. It might have 65 or it might have 74 rows in it. In the simplest form, it will have a row for every one of the progeny. The first column of that file will be the identifier for the progeny. The second column will be the identifier of its sire, and the third column the identifier of its dam. But its dams are unknown, so that's a column of zeros. Now, in fact, our data file is set up in that form, so we can use the data file itself to provide the pedigree. What ASRML does with that pedigree file is to form an inverse relationship matrix. Well, what is a relationship matrix? It is a covariance matrix showing the relationship between the various individuals in the pedigree. The standard relationship matrix includes all the animals known in the pedigree, so it has 74 rows, being the 9 sires and the 65 progeny. If dams were known, then they would be included in there as well. If grandparents were known, then they would be included in there as well. The remarkable thing about this matrix is that it can be formed in a recursive manner relatively easily, and its inverse is more easily formed than the relationship matrix itself. And it is, in fact, the inverse that we want. A key component, though, is that we need to have the inbreeding coefficient of each of the individuals. In the relationship matrix, the relationship value of an individual with itself is 1 plus its inbreeding coefficient. And the inbreeding coefficient is half the relationship between its parents. So if its parents are unrelated, then there's no inbreeding. If its parents are related, then there is some inbreeding, it being half the relationship between the parents. The relationship of an animal with other animals is simply the average of the values associated with its parents. If we're working progressively through the file, as we add each individual in birth order, then we know all about its parents and all about relationships with individuals already added, and we identify where the two parents occur in the matrix already formed and average those two rows to produce a new row, and then we insert the diagonal value as 1 plus f, where f is half the relationship between the parents. We can write this down in a fairly simplistic way, and as we're forming the inverse of the relationship matrix, given the relationship of a set of individuals, we write the inverse by just adding another row to that matrix and modifying the existing elements. So as I've displayed this here, a to the minus 1 subscript I is the expanded matrix. It's got an extra row and column given the A without a subscript, which is the relationship matrix that exists prior to inserting this new animal. The P is a vector which is all zero except for two halves in the positions corresponding to the two parents. So if we take the matrix P A, then that is equivalent to averaging the two rows of A. Well, this requires calculating a quantity Q, and this quantity Q is the inbreeding for the new animal, plus one, minus a weighted average of the relationships between the parents, and this works out to have an explicit form which just depends on the inbreeding values for the parents. So if we keep a list of the inbreeding values for the parents, we can progressively form this matrix. What does it look like? Well, in the case of the sire model that we're fitting to our Harvey data, ordering the nine sires first, there's no relationship between the sires, so that's simply an identity matrix. The ones, there's no inbreeding, so it's just an identity matrix of order nine. And then we have the relationship of each of the progeny with the sire, which is just the sire incidence matrix, a half of that. And then we form the diagonal block, which is the cross products of that sire incidence matrix times a quarter plus three quarters of an identity. And you could work that through from the information that's given there. Now, I've just explained that briefly, but that's all the calculation that's going on in ASReml, and provided you specify the pedigree matrix correctly, then you don't need to worry about any more of that. So what are we doing when we're fitting an animal model? Well, we're changing the variance model that we're fitting to an equivalent model. Instead of fitting sires, we're fitting animals. We're fitting a covariance matrix, and here we show the equivalence of the two forms. The first form, the variance, is sigma squared E times an identity, that's the residual part, plus sigma squared A, Z, A, Z dash, where Z is the design matrix for the individuals. Now, what does Z look like? Well, for the first block of it, corresponding to sires, we have no data on the sires, so the first block is all zero, and then we have an identity matrix for the 65 individuals with records, and if we plug that Z matrix into that expression, V simplifies down to giving the variance of the error variance, and sigma squared A times a quarter of the relationship between the sires, or the sires and the individuals, plus 0.75 of an identity. And rearranging that matrix produces the matrix that boils down to being the same as fitting just the sire design matrix with different variances. The error variance under the sire model is sigma squared E plus three quarters of the additive genetic variance, and the sire variance is a quarter of the additive genetic variance. Now, when we fitted the sire model, we worked the other way and went from the sire variance, we multiplied it by four to get the additive genetic variance, and we obtained that sigma squared E by subtracting three times the sire variance from the residual that we got from the sire model. So that shows the equivalence of those two approaches. Well, how will we run this in ASReml? We've set this job up to test both models, and so we've got a command line here with redo so that we can label the output Harvey 1 or Harvey 2. I've got here an option which enables you to prompt in ASReml which model you want to run. So exclamation mark arg says these are the arguments. Exclamation mark question mark prompts you to supply a string, and the remainder of that line tells you the prompt options. If you put in a 1, or put in a 2, depending on whether you want a sire or an animal model. So we've set this job up to do both forms. We've got the title line, Harvey Testator. Animal now is defined with exclamation mark P, so we form the relationship matrix. Sire has 9 levels, there are 9 sires. Dam is a column of zeros. We've got lines again, dam age, ADJ weight, age and weight. The name of the data file is repeated the first time it's read as a pedigree file, since we're using the same file for both purposes, and the second time it is read as a data file. And we have do part $1, which means we'll either do part 1 or part 2. Part 1 fits the sire model, so ADJ is modelled as mean, line, dam age and random effect sire. Part 2 fits the animal model. Very similar, except we fit animal instead of sire. When we run that, we'll get a log likelihood, and the log likelihood should be the same because it's an equivalent model, but the variance parameters will be different. And these variance parameters are shown here. The animal component is 115, the residual variance is 46.07. We can compare that with the sire variance, which would have been a quarter of 115, and under the sire model the residual variance would have been 46 plus 3 quarters of the 115. We also get the analysis of variance, and that also will agree, and we get some effects for dam age, line, mean and animal, and these fixed effects will agree also. What is different, however, is that the SLN file also contains animal solutions, 74 of them, solutions for the sires and the progeny, whereas in the sire model we only had the sire solutions. Now SRAML generates a plot of residuals, and hopefully you're used to seeing that at this stage, but when you look at the plot of residuals under an animal model, you see a very strong relationship between the residual on the y-axis and the fitted value on the x-axis. And that might be disturbing to you, but you need to realise that what we have here as the fitted value is in fact simply the sire predicted value plus part of the residual added on to reflect the fact that there's additional variation. A portion of that residual actually is additive genetic variance, and the proportion that is added back is relative to the heritability in that situation. And so we expect a relationship between the residuals and the fitted values. Now think about that if you don't follow it immediately. Think about what the residual is and what the relationship between that residual is and the residual that you obtained under the sire model. Under the sire model there was independence, but in this model, because we have correlated structure in the genetic effects, the individual animal effects, that correlated structure has effectively transferred some of the sire model residual, a proportion of it, into the animal model prediction, and consequently generated that association. We can think about other genetic components that we might have, and we won't go into detail of these, but if we have dams identified and we have generations of dams so that we can distinguish a maternal genetic component, then we would define the dam with an exclamation mark P and include dam in the model as well as the animal effect. Now, since that's a genetic effect, we can include the covariance of that as well, and we'll look at how to do that a little bit later when we talk about variance structures but to include it as an independent effect, and you would do that first, because if there's no variation associated with it, then there is no possibility of estimating a covariance. But if there is dam variance, then we would estimate the covariance as well. We could include an individual animal non-genetic effect by using the model term IDE of animal. And we could include a maternal environment effect by adding the term IDE of dam, both of those, or all of those, as random terms in the model. What we're talking about now is estimability of components, in that the animal model sometimes doesn't generate a solution. Why is that? Well, we can go back to thinking about the old way, when I was a lad, of calculating variance components, where you would start with a sire model and you would calculate a sire mean square and a residual mean square. And then you would equate the expected value of the sire mean square to its expectation. And that was normally written as sigma squared E, the residual variance, plus some proportion of sigma squared S, the sire variance. Now, the mean square possibly could be zero, but generally is greater than zero. But if there's not much sire variance, it might end up being less than the residual variance. And of that, of course, would lead to a negative estimate of the sire variance component. Now, often we would, in a Remmel context, constrain the sire variance component to be positive. In other words, we wouldn't allow sigma squared S to have a negative solution. But in a certain proportion of times, it will come up with that negative solution. So our sire variance component could be zero, which simply reflects the fact we've constrained it so that it's not allowed to be negative. And that simply reflects that under Henderson's model, we would have had a sire mean square that was smaller than the residual mean square. The situation gets more complicated when we move to an animal model, because now we're solving for the genetic variance directly, and that's a larger number. And if it's too big, then we might end up with a negative residual. And that reflects the situation when the heritability calculated in the traditional form is greater than 1, or if the sire mean square is over the phenotypic variance is greater than 1/4. Now, that can happen because of sampling variation, in that these mean squares are sampled from a distribution when we collect our data. So while the mean or the expected value has a positive number, the actual observed value may not be in the bounds we'd like it to be. So we have both of these issues confronting us when we're using Remmel to estimate the variance component. When we used Henderson method 3, we could see, okay, we've got a negative variance component, or yes, the heritability is greater than 1. And then we would deal with that. But when we use Remmel and the linear mixed model, we don't have that opportunity of seeing this intermediate state. We simply end up with variance components, or the inability to estimate variance components, because we've constrained our solution to be in the space, while the natural solution from the data is outside of the space where we require our solutions. I suggest you take the Harvey data and run the animal model and look at the outputs, check the residuals, make sure that you can see the relationship between the sire model variance components and the animal model variance components. And the stratum variances that come out from the sire model analysis should show you the K coefficient that would have been used to relate these estimates back in Henderson's method 3 approach. In our next session, we'll be looking at doing a bivariate analysis on this data.